Welcome to the Oneness Restored podcast, imperfect stories of oneness, justice, and reconciliation. I'm your host, Alejandra Nikki Pisania.
And I'm your host, John Oihoma Ikegi.
Hermana!
Kionda! Alpha!
Hey, there we go. Let's get our greetings right.
Yeah.
Good to see you on this beautiful day.
Oh, man.
Sun is shining, sky is blue, but we're excited because we have two amazing guests who are here with us to talk really about just a very important topic, something that's affected all of us, but has also affected all of us in very different ways.
Yeah, right. You know, absolutely.
We talk about like COVID-19 and, you know, the way that the pandemic has really just affected our world, really stopped economies, has really just changed the way we do school, changed the way we worship as a church.
Worship, you know, changed
the way we interact with friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way we celebrate parties. I mean, people are doing, you know.
Man, I remember my birthday earlier this year. I was about to blow out the candles and they were like, nope.
Can't do that no more.
Yeah. Yeah, life has changed so much.
Life has changed. What's life been like for you, sis? Like,
oh man,
as you've adjusted to just kind of
feels a little bit like a loaded question, but I'll keep it narrow to just COVID-19. So definitely did all the bread making. We made bread a lot. We made pizzas a lot.
Okay.
A lot of just different cooking. We did. We went through that as a family. That season of COVID of just, I mean, just trying to find some sort of excitement throughout the day, the days that just meshed all together. But I think that just like reality really hit once our neighbor got COVID and then he eventually passed away. And from COVID and it wasn't just about, hey, I'm going to try out this new recipe, or hey, I'm going to binge on this new series. Those things definitely still happened, but it was, there was a layer of heaviness when just the realities of living of a, through a pandemic hits you in the face.
No, you know? That's true. And I remember for me, the place where I really felt some of, you know, the reality of the pandemic kind of hitting my community, but also just a way in which it really didn't affect everybody equally was just, there was a time where it seemed like every one of my African-American friends I talked to had a family member who had COVID or had a family member who had passed from COVID, sometimes even like multiple family members as well. And so I know for me, just kind of having those conversations, it was like, man, like this, it seems like it's a great equalizer, but it really is hitting some communities in different ways. The impact is just very different in certain communities than others.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all of us in our home, we thankfully still had a job. But we were, I mean, I work for the church, so it's a little bit different, but the rest were considered essential workers.
Yeah. Right?
So my father still had to come
had to
in,
go in.
And he's in his 60s to work. My brother still has to go in, although his workplace is probably one of the cleanest environments.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sterilization happening. Sterilizing.
Yeah.
That's a weird word. But, and then, you know, just others who either lost jobs because of it or we just were experiencing like job life in a much different way.
And
it's just, I remember one time, one Sunday, we had, we hadn't had in-person services for a while at that point, and, no one was coming in. So even before we kind of got like our life together when it came to live streaming services, it was really just like two or three people that would, it was a small handful.
Maybe.
3 to 5 is probably a better picture that would come in on Sundays and create worship services to live stream
with GoPro cameras and
GoPro. I mean, we did all kinds of stuff. Thank you, Jesus, for like equipment and things like that. But not like just as a worship leader, like hearing the voices of the members on Sunday mornings, it's just like a sweet, sweet symphony.
Yeah.
And I mean, not hearing that also not singing with others in general. That's something that I've been grieving.
Yeah.
But one Sunday before we had our in-person services, one of our elders, Elijah, I could hear him singing. Mm. And I almost I probably did. Y'all could probably go back and watch this. I was like, I'm crying. Like, it was just, it'd been so long to hear and to sing with others on a Sunday morning. I think that was a moment where for me, it really hit like just how heavy this was on me. This was on me. It just says in my calling and just how the Lord has created me to be, how it had affected me deeply. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was, because you're just kind of, you go.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd realized it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, just kind of talking about grief, like I also just remember in the life of our church that there are certain things that didn't stop happening, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so, a lot of times you think as COVID, like, hey, you know, the world kind of stood still, but just kind of in my role as an elder, seeing like, you know, there's a few weddings that have happened.
Yeah.
During this time that I've attended, there's actually a few funerals as well.
Yeah.
That have happened in the life of our church. And I think the thing that hit me was just how different those times of celebration and mourning were.
Yes.
Within the midst of this pandemic, and just how differently people had to show up in those spaces, how differently people were celebrating or mourning. Mm-hmm. Going to a funeral and not being sure if I could hug, a grieving father or two grieving parents or doing it in a way, but like still feeling like, hey, I hope I'm being safe. I hope you're being safe as we're kind of trying to comfort one another. So it's there's definitely a lot of grief and just not being able to show up and care for people the way that we should. But I think the challenge really has been, you know, for us as people of God, people who've been called to love, not just with words, but with action. Mm-hmm. How do we do that in the midst of a global pandemic, right?
Yeah, and all of the structures and programs that the quote unquote church has put in place.
Yeah.
Not all of them work anymore, right? Yeah. And so it took a lot of different creativity from different members in the church to sort of shift and change the way caring for one another looked like.
Mm-hmm.
I think another thing, as you were talking about stuff that grieves, that has grieved me throughout this pandemic, is like the heightened racism that we've seen.
Yeah.
And the heightened classism
that
we've seen through this pandemic of, and we'll talk about this with Judy and Susan.
Yeah.
Just how Asian Americans have been enduring a lot of racism in this season, and just seeing how everything moving online and live streaming and healthcare being provided online, just how we've seen disparities in healthcare because of that and because of socioeconomic classes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really just poignant to see that there isn't equity in the systems that we have, whether if it's healthcare system or educational system, you know, that Black, Indigenous, Latino, people of color seem to be impacted a lot more negatively by everything that's going on, and also just people who are poor, right? People who are poor economically and materially aren't able to adjust to this new normal in the same way that the rest of us have. Like, for me, it's really, COVID has shown me just the amount of privilege that I have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And how I've been able to adjust, and, you know, definitely not to minimize the suffering and not to minimize the grief of the things that I miss about what used to happen before COVID. Mm-hmm. But I think on the flip side as well, just being able to see that even in the midst of all of that, like compared to what other people go through, there is a sense of privilege that I have. And I think the question I've been asking is like, what kind of responsibility does that mean I have as well to care for my brothers and sisters,
absolutely,
to care for other image bearers of of God who are going through this in a way that seems hopeless. And so it's really a big question to just kind of keep asking and not to lose sight of, you know, the fact that there are blessings that God has given us. There are certain privileges that we have that have come at the expense of mm-hmm. other people. Mm-hmm. And what does equity kind of look like
right.
in our systems, in our society, in the way we treat one another, in the way we neighbor and work with one another,
yeah.
in the language that we use to talk about the pandemic.
Yes.
So, yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, talk to me a little bit about like that word equity. Like when you hear the word equity and you think about the pandemic, what are some things that come to mind for you?
Oh man. So equity is like a newer term for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about when thinking about justice and thinking about, like what it means to be a good neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
There's this graphic that an old professor of mine shared, and mm-hmm. it has like this tree, right?
Yeah.
Like one guy, he's got a ladder and he's able to get the fruit from the tree.
Uh-huh.
And then it's also like, kind of bent in a way that doesn't allow the other person on the other side to get fruit from that tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of goes through like what equality looks like,
mm-hmm.
what equity looks like, and then what justice looks like for mm-hmm. that. And so for equity, it's this, well, I'm going to provide something to make you just as the fruit of this tree just as accessible
mm-hmm.
to both. And then justice means to correct the tree.
Yeah.
When I think about equity, I honestly think about the ways that my mom has shown that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of our neighbors, during the summer, their daughter would come and she would help her learn how to read.
Yeah.
Providing school supplies for a bunch of different kids because mm-hmm. that's just who she is.
That's who she is. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of us have benefited from her generosity.
Yeah. But no, that's mm-hmm. how she's shown up, whether it's giving it financially.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, like that's what I've been able to do is to do that much more than some of the relational aspects of equity. So
yeah.
there is a bit of distance in that, which mm-hmm. is unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's where I have the capacity
mm-hmm.
To show up to be an ambassador of equity.
Amen. Yeah. I always think of love when I think of it, right? That it's really just a way to love what God has intended for this world, to really mm-hmm. love the ways in which, you know, we might not all be treated exactly the same, but
yeah.
that there's this quality of fairness to the way that we treat other people, quality of justice and fairness and the systems. I think of like Amos chapter 5.
Yeah.
Right. That talks about justice rolling down and
like
the
river.
Verses. Yeah. Like a justice rolling down like mighty waters, righteousness like a never ending stream. And just this picture in the beginning of Amos 5 where it talks about like your weights and measures and how
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the prophecy and the challenge that Amos brings to the people of Israel is that there are ways in which the nation is kind of making the weights smaller,
yeah.
but charging more for
yeah.
that, right? You know,
yeah.
there isn't this sense of fairness in the way the nation was dealing with its citizens and the way that it was dealing in commerce and in taking care of others.
Oppressiveness.
Yeah.
So, or oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Making
yeah, so
here.
Like just for us as Christians, there is a call. If we are called to love, mm-hmm. if we are called to bear the image of Christ and to love our neighbors as we love ourselves, that equity is a big part of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a way that we do that in community and do that through the structures and the things that God has created. So,
yeah. Yeah. There's like an active part to it. And I mm-hmm. think that's, as we've been having discussions throughout this podcast, is that idea of action in this particular discipleship focus or discipleship theme mm-hmm. of being reconcilers and being reconciled to one another, being peacemakers. There's an action part of it that mm-hmm. I think historically for me, just it's always been, well, I'm not racist
yeah.
or I'm not participating in oppressive behaviors. I'm not using language like Kung Flu or China virus to diminish another image bearer. So I'm good. But there is an action that even that picture of Amos calls Israel to do, right? Yeah. And what Jesus calls us to do. And there's, Susan goes into this a little bit, and so does Judy.
Yeah.
As we have our conversation with them.
Yeah. So to lead into our conversation, I want to read from 1 John chapter 3, verse 16 through 18. And this is what it says. It's talking about love here. It says, "By this we know love, that he," that's Jesus Christ, "laid down his life for us, that we ought to also lay down our lives for the brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and truth."
Amen.
Love has to be active. Love must be true and sincere. And knowing God means that we move to actions of justice and mercy and equity. Amen. So let's have our conversation. Well, we are excited to have two very, very special guests on the show today. And I'll just go ahead and ask you guys to just introduce yourselves. So Susan, let's start with you. Just kind of give us a little intro. Tell us your name, kind of what you do, and things that you love that kind of make you you.
Oh, don't forget your ethnic, like, how do you identify as?
Yeah, I was getting there.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. My bad. I thought you took a pause.
Yeah.
You can edit that out.
No, let's leave it in.
Okay. I'm Susan. I am a pediatric nurse. I specialize in oncology, so I work with kids with cancer. I am biracial. Okay. So my dad's white and my mom's Taiwanese.
Okay.
Got to be very specific. We're not Chinese, we're Taiwanese.
Taiwanese. All right, get it right.
Well, it's very fresh. I love the outdoor and I love hiking. I just came back from a long camping and hiking trip. So feeling a little fresh from that. Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you, Susan. Judy, same questions to you.
All right. So my name is Judy Kim. And I will start by saying what most Koreans will call me out on, in that I'm not actually ethnically Korean, even though my last name is Kim. So I'm married to Nathan Kim, and we've been at City of Refuge for 12 years. Nathan's been here a little bit longer than I have. And we've got two kids, Gideon and then Bethany. And then I work at Baylor College of Medicine. I do primary care for adults with developmental disabilities. I'm Taiwanese American, so I was born in Fargo, North Dakota. But my parents, my parents are from Taiwan. But they came to the U.S., for grad school. So they've now been in the U.S. longer than they've been in Taiwan. But, you know, at home, we still speak Taiwanese with my parents. And
are your parents American citizens?
They are.
Too? Okay.
Yeah. So they are American citizens. So.
Nikki and I always joke about sort of some of the things we're about to talk about. We are going to be talking a lot about COVID and how COVID has affected our world. And so we talk about like the BC times, the before COVID
Not
times.
Christ, COVID.
Yes. That little thing has had the abbreviation has a new meaning. But one thing that we've noticed is just sort of at the beginning of the pandemic, it really seemed like COVID was like the great equalizer, right? Like everybody is kind of dealing with the same stuff. Everybody's kind of, you know, challenged by the virus. But as things kind of progressed, we really started to see that not everybody is experiencing COVID the same way and the effects of COVID in the same way. And so one thing we just wanted to just kind of dive into is a conversation to see, hey, what are some ways that we have seen that happening in our communities or in communities around us. But before we start, could you just tell us a little bit about like what's entering this season of COVID? What's that been like for you? How have you been adjusting to kind of like this new normal that we have to live with? Why don't you go first, Susan?
Well, I'm an inpatient nurse, so it's literally changed everything about mm-hmm. work. It's a very stark difference. We have to screen every patient that comes in the hospital. I've had patients that I'm taking care of. We don't know, you know, their COVID test is pending, and you know, you refresh your screen and boom, they have COVID. And you're like, oh, all right, what do we do now? It's definitely been stressful. And I think as a nurse, very exhausting. There's just a new layer of, I think, uncertainty with working in the hospital. I think it's you know, built our teamwork as, you know, with my coworkers, with, you know, we really need to be there for each other. Just the work is more intense now. It's also kind of an added like mental, emotional stress. So, you know, I have to be there for each other. Maybe also to this extent too, like we're taking work home with us now. We have to worry about our families and those we're living with, those we would be close with otherwise. I remember the start of the pandemic, just really being scared about, am I going to take COVID home to my parents who are retired and, you know, at risk? But I think also besides that, like not being able to see people, like deliberately having to isolate at home just to keep others safe. And I'm an introvert, or maybe partly an ambivert. So I think maybe there's some part of me that was like, this is great. but there's only so much isolation I think a person can take. And then at some point, I really need to see people. But kind of that strange tension of, I need to see people to kind of some sanity and also, you know, not to feel so alone. But at the same time, like I'm working in a hospital with, you know, with patients that may or may not have COVID, but how can I be safe but also still take care of myself and take care of others? Yeah, it's gotten better, I think, as we've adjusted. Like me and my parents who live together, just as we've, I guess, adjusted to the new normal and have had healthy conversations of like, what do we need to keep our family safe? But it's still kind of an ongoing conversation because we're not done yet. We're still in the thick of it. But I think, you know, that still helped with, I think, like we can communicate well, like what are our goals together as a family. That, you know, they'll say, hey, I saw this on the news. What are you doing in your hospital? Or is this true? And just, you know, have a healthy dialogue and like, no, you still need to wear a mask when you're going outside and you're walking around. Please don't shake hands with people, Dad.
you mentioned something about like just how you and your coworkers have kind of been each other's support system. Mm-hmm. How has that kind of lived out in the workplace? And even like, as you said, like when you take work home, like how has that, how has that been expressed?
Very practically. It means when you know, on a every day you come to work, you know, we look at the floor and who has a PUI, who has a patient who's under investigation, their COVID's not back yet. We already know that that'll affect your whole day. Like until their test is back, you know, they cannot leave the room. You have to gown, double mask, glove, face shield before going in there. So you're taking as much into that trip as you can. And then those memes of stuck in COVID land, very true. You're like, I call my friend on my phone, hey, I forgot a pump. I forgot this equipment. Can you please hand this to me so I don't have to degown, go out and get it, and then come back? So it's made us very, I think, just extra aware of our coworkers. You know, you don't work by yourself. Like you really have to be there to help each other out. And then just, I think just being also sensitive to how, you know, if my coworkers just looks burnt out and hasn't eaten lunch and it's like 5 and is, has, because you have your, you might have those patients. You may also have very busy patients. You know, we're a cancer floor. What can I do to help you? Like, what do you need right now for me to do for you? I think, I mean, also to that, like being a cancer floor, there's a whole other layer on there. And we've only in the last year or two become a cancer floor. So just that extra layer of, man, my kid's not doing good. I feel so bad for their families. And just like, yeah, being there for them. Because, you know, you're a caregiver. You want to care for your patients physically. But there's so much like psychologically, like emotionally, mentally going on. Like, how can I also be there for them? But then even as a caregiver, how can I take care of myself? Because to some extent, I don't want to leave work at work because then I'm not processing how I'm feeling. So I think also just checking up with each other, like, hey, how are you feeling? For those that I know are believers at work, just like, hey, how can I pray for you? Like, you know, having those conversations too, like, you know, life's hard, but God's still good. And just what that means beyond those cliche words.
Yeah. Amen. How about for you, Judy? Same question, you know, what's the transition and adjustment been like in this season? And I think especially for you as a parent, you know, we'd like to hear that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think transition, that's like the name of the game, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, so many changes in the spring happened so quickly. You know, our kids, they were going to a pre-K program and it shut down like with a week's notice. And in some sense, you know, I think the season really made us grateful for a few things. I think there were some changes that were good. In the sense that it gave us more time together, especially like on weekends, we realized that sometimes we just fill up the weekends with stuff and you're just kind of running around. And then by that time, the weekend's over. And I think it's been really nice to have more weekends where it's just nothing planned and just a lot of time together with family. We also, Nathan and I just realized too, you know, we were really grateful because for him and me, you know, our work didn't stop. So we were able to work. He transitioned to working only from home. So he's still working from home, but that change was pretty seamless. And then for me, I still worked. I mean, it looked very, there were like every week was different. And so there's certainly a lot of changes in terms of how, we were seeing patients in clinic. So, you know, we went through seasons where it was just telehealth. Then we went through seasons where it was, a few in person, and then now we're kind of seeing more people in clinic. But despite all the changes, I still was able to go to work and still able to continue to get paid and to have somewhat of my old routine of like going to work in place. And I think we realized, you know, what a luxury that is, because for a lot of people, you know, when the city shut down, so did their work, and no work, no pay. And so we just really humbly recognize that, I mean, we're thankful in some sense that we were able to maintain that. But realizing that, you know, for a lot of people, it's not the case. In terms of my work, you know, for a while we were doing like almost all telehealth visits. So either phone visits or video visits. And I think there are some... Initially, it was like, wow, this is really nice. I can still see patients or take care of people. But then over time, you kind of realize that it's not the same as seeing people in person, and that some families fare well doing telehealth visits, you know, because that's a lot of assumptions that you've got stable internet, you have access to some sort of a device that can do video and phone. And for some families, that's really a challenge. And for certain patient populations, like I know I have a friend who does geriatrics and all of her patients are like older than 70 and they have no, like, they don't know how to get the telehealth visit set up. And so, you know, just realizing that it affects people in terms of their access to healthcare, differently. Mm-hmm. So I think we are seeing, John, you had initially said that it was the equalizer.
Yeah,
and at first, I think everybody got, you know, caught by surprise, mm-hmm. and everything was shut down and changed. But I think over time now that we're seeing that this is going to be for the long haul, you see that certain people have support systems that allow them to adapt better than others. And so, you know, we are starting to see, we've already been seeing disparities in that. And you talk about school too, right? Like, so the schools play such an, in public schools, play such an important role for so many people. Like, you know, a lot of people depend on the school system for not just education,
food.
But for food,
healthcare,
for childcare. You know, if a mm-hmm. kid, if a parent needs to go to work, they need the schools to provide a place where their child can go. And again, some families can fare with the schools being closed because they've got the support systems. But I think we also see and hear stories of people personally who it is really taking a toll on their child's mental health, emotional health, you know, education. It affects the whole family too.
Yeah, definitely. I know just kind of even looking at our neighborhood, the neighborhood I live in, a lot of parents are affected by this just by sort of like a digital divide, right? You know, not having enough technology, either computers or access to the internet to actually like even use online or virtual learning as an option. And there's a Y close to our house. And, you know, I think it's like either every week or every other week, you know, we just see long lines of people who are waiting to get food from the Y, right? And just kind of really being heartbroken by, again, just the demographics of the people that I see, you know, as we go into to work, you know, just it's usually people of color who are waiting, right? And just seeing just how the effects are not the same depending on what community you're in. But one question that I wanted to follow up with, just kind of switching gears a little bit, is there has been a lot of rhetoric around the virus that has been pretty racist, both rhetoric from citizens, private citizens, and even from the government and from the president as well. And I just wanted to get your reactions. You know, the virus has been called the Kung Flu, the China virus. There's been all these names that have been kind of listed. And I remember when we were first still meeting in person and the virus broke, an Asian American sister at the church during our communion time when we were still praying together in person told me she was scared, right? You know, that was what she was asking for prayer for. Like, hey, I'm really scared because of what I hear this virus being described as and just the repercussions that that might have, even if not personally on me, but on my community. I'm just wondering from your experience and your perspective, just what kind of thoughts and feelings you guys have had around just the rhetoric that has surrounded the coronavirus and COVID-19 in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Start with you, Judy.
So as Nathan and I were talking about this, like before I came, and I, you know, specifically as it's been referred to in the as the China virus, I was telling him, you know, to me, it's so unnecessary and kind of like an eye roll, like really. But I also recognize, you know, I'm saying that as someone who doesn't necessarily identify as Chinese. So, my parents are from Taiwan, and I'm sure people are aware that there are people who are like Taiwan, Taiwanese, and that's my family. So we like definitely identify as like being Taiwanese and not as like Chinese. And so I think I also recognize that, you know, if I identified as Chinese, I think that would really hit a lot. Yeah, it would just hit home a lot more and hurt a lot more. So I think, you know, there is... That's kind of like, to me, it feels so unnecessary, but there is still some sort of distance, at least I perceive, because I don't identify, you know, as being Chinese. What you were saying, John, about, you know, certain fears are surfacing. I know that my cousin who lives in Boston, he had sent us, my family, some articles about some of the things that people in like the New York area and New England have faced, especially healthcare providers, Asian healthcare providers. And again, Asia is huge, right? Like, right. So it's not just China. I mean, it's like Philippines, Japan, like tons of countries. And yet lots of people, Asian healthcare providers were facing a lot of very direct threats from people that they knew they didn't know of, you know? And so you hear stories about, you know, getting called names just down the street or people or being refused to be seen by certain patients because they're seen as being Asian. And so I think certainly in maybe as the virus was really affecting huge populations in like New York and stuff, I think that there was certainly a lot more of that. I don't think I haven't experienced that personally, but one experience that does kind of hit home a little bit more was over the summer, my family had decided to go to Port Aransas just to kind of get away for a little bit. And my parents, you know, it was my sisters and my parents and my family. And we were like packing to go. And my parents were like packing. And part of it is also the Asian thing, just pack lots of food because, you know, we go, food is love. And so one of the things that my sister had said was, you know, she told my mom, she's like, oh, you know, you know that they have grocery stores in Port Aransas. And my mom had mentioned, she was like, yeah, but your dad just kind of feels nervous about going to grocery stores in small towns. And I'd never, like, to me, Port Aransas is not a small town. And but then I also just realized that, you know, you're right. I mean, my parents have accents. We look Asian. And, you know, even before COVID, sometimes in just small towns in Texas, you see Confederate flags in the trucks. And especially during COVID, I think there's just a lot of fear in people about, people maybe who look Asian. And so that was the first time that I was like, wow, really? I never would have thought that. But I also at the same time was like, wow, I can – unfortunately, you do hear stories about senseless acts of violence towards people just because they're Asian in this season. And so even though, again, I haven't personally gone through any experience, praise I think the you Lord. Feel the ripple – effects yeah. of it.
It's because it's like what happens like to someone in your community definitely affects you like personally.
Yeah.
That one's going to have like different levels of effect, but that's what God calls us to do, right? To mourn with those who are mourning mm-hmm. and rejoice with those who are rejoicing. And so when you see someone in your community who has experienced racism or violence because of what they look like, right? Yeah, it's definitely going to affect. Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about this yesterday. Judy and I just kind of talking about like going into small towns in Texas and or even just traveling in Texas sometimes. I love my state. Let me just get that. Let's just put that out there. Okay. I love Texas. Yeah. Just some like kind of some of the rhetoric that was used back in 2016 and during the presidential election, like, yeah, I started traveling or even around the city with like my passport and things like that, just identification of citizenship, because the fear comes not because of part of it is this, but the fear comes because of the rhetoric, because of what people are saying and, like, people didn't say things that were racist. It's just to put it that like that. Like, yeah, I wouldn't have to be afraid, right? Yeah. And I'm sorry your parents have to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, I think for me, the word I think of is, you know, fairness, and that, you know, that's not a world that's fair when certain people are singled out. Without even knowing who they are, right? You know, but just because there's something that another person deems as connected to them and their experience that's dangerous, then we just kind of really just use words to alienate and to destroy the fabrics of community that God has actually called us to. And, you know, to other people and to other communities, instead of really looking for ways that we can fight against a common enemy together. How about for you, Susan? Like, any thoughts around that question about like the language and the rhetoric that's used?
Yeah, I think when you're asking, like, things that had come to mind was just, this kind of shows people's ignorance when they are using words so carelessly or deliberately to single people out and hurt them. I think maybe like Judy, like I haven't had any of those personal experiences like directly, but and then I think on top of that being mixed, I don't know if I look obviously Asian, but yeah, having conversations with friends during the pandemic, like in different states, I think some were personally affected, or even just sharing like those living in California, Louisiana, and just personally feeling afraid. And yeah, like I was reading an article of my mom's about the trend of like Asian Americans like buying firearms, like during like when the pandemic was getting bad, just kind of as like for protection. Just kind of like makes you stop and pause and be like, whoa, words hurt and words are powerful. I think maybe like Judy too, there's some kind of an eye roll in there too when hearing things on the news or talked about on social media. But I don't know. I think I also struggle with like being disillusioned and just kind of just being very disappointed with people's responses, maybe in people in leadership, people who have influence. Just like, why can't we be more mature than this, more responsible? I was talking to a friend about this too. Just, I feel like COVID kind of opened people's eyes in America too. We haven't come that far and there's still a lot to work on. Like it was easier to ignore the problems and think we're great. And now there's tragedies and the pandemic has shown there's a lot of gaps. There's a lot to work on. People are still people. And that's sometimes kind of sad.
Yeah, it's definitely like lifted the veil. Like there's just certain aspects of like everyday life in the BC times and before times that really make it easier to just think about how things are just, we're good. Everything's Gucci. Like we all get along, you know, but yeah, just hearing even Judy, like how some of your patients have difficulty getting healthcare because now they have to think about access to internet and devices that have that capability in different households, like how that affects their home life, whether it's because they've lost a job because of COVID or now they have kids at home and they're eating them out of house and home, you know, and or they don't have access to internet like you were talking about too, John. Like, yeah, how have you seen the church kind of show up to fill these gaps that you've seen and that we've witnessed? I know, Susan, you serve on as a deacon here, and Judy, I know that you serve just diligently and faithfully in different aspects, even as community group leader and as just a good neighbor. Like, how have you seen the church either fail at this or do this well, or places that we can do better?
Yeah. I think serving on the diaconate, I was really encouraged, I think, by the way people in the church and, you know, on church leadership, I think really saw there's a need, like that the, you know, the congregation is individually affected in different ways, but just overall, people are lonely. People are afraid and are struggling. So I served on the benevolence team during the pandemic. There were different applications. Some from people in the church. Some from people in the church knew, friends or coworkers that knew that they needed help. It's very crisis kind of help. Like, my rent's going to be up. And I need help before I get evicted. Yeah, I can't buy food for my family because half my household was laid off. Hearing people's stories and just trying to reach out and help them. Like, yeah, I think part of the church's mission, you want to share the love and the message of Christ, but you know, you can't do that when your brother's hungry. So you have to serve them very tangibly in order to really, share the heart and the message of Christ. And I think also reaching out to people in the congregation, like we had a goal. We wanted to call every single member in the congregation and check up how they're doing when we couldn't meet in person. And I think even beyond that, like staying connected with people in our community groups, and other like friends in church. It's not the same as meeting in person. It's not the same as, you know, having that freedom, BC before COVID, to be able to spend like quality face-to-face time. But there's still something, I think, that you feel cared for. You feel seen when someone is making that effort to directly reach out to you. I think, I mean, maybe kind of your broader question too. I think there's definitely been times, I think, during the pandemic, I'm like, maybe just church, global church, like, I think we kind of dropped the ball. What an opportunity that we could have, you know, in a time when this crisis is affecting all parts of the world. People are scared. People are anxious and afraid, and many are alone. Like, what an opportune time for the gospel. And I don't see that there was a conscious, direct effort in order to reach those that could have been such an opportune time. Yeah. To offer the love and the strength of Christ when people desperately needed it, and people were realizing, faith in man fails. Like, all our great progress of, in technology or our systems, whatnot, and we're still still have widespread suffering and death. So a little bit of a disappointment. But I think God's is gracious, and, you know, there's individual opportunity, I think, for every person to make a difference in their own way, and just kind of be challenged of, you know, how can I be part of a greater movement to reach my neighbor who's suffering and hurting probably like I am.
Mm. Lord, have mercy on us. Judy, is there anything you'd like to share?
I guess, you know, I think during COVID, it provided an opportunity, I think, for us to carry each other's burdens in ways that maybe we wouldn't have seen or looked for those opportunities. And I think for me personally, I really am thankful for people within our church that we know personally, whose lives look very different from ours and who are experiencing this pandemic in a very different way. And I think it helps me to see how quick it would be for me to judge people's responses had I not known personally kind of what their circumstances are like. And so, you know, again, I'm speaking very generally, but I just am thankful for people that, you know, again, who are just so resilient in very hard circumstances. And it really just is a privilege to be able to help carry burdens in ways that we should, but I wouldn't necessarily have looked for opportunities in this time. And I think, you know, there's so much that's been going on in this season. I mean, COVID is one thing, and then there's so much other stuff. And I am thankful for our small group, because I think it has provided a place where people have been able to share openly about different ways that they've experienced things that have been going on. And so much has been going on, right? And I think it just, for me, it makes me realize, again, I can't fully experience things as someone might experience. In the sense, as I hear their stories, I get a glimpse of their perspective that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And I know I'm speaking very generally here, but again, I think that's kind of the beauty of a church that looks as different as ours. And I think it comes with challenges. It really does. Because yeah. Then you've got basically, yes, you know, hundreds of different perspectives and hundreds of different experiences. But at the same time, I think as we do that, as we hear people's stories, you get just a glimpse of like the different burdens that people carry. And so I think, again, COVID has just kind of allowed us to see how people experience these times differently.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a window, an opportunity, invitation to practice compassion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Thank you so much, Judy and Susan. It was just a joy to have this conversation with y'all this afternoon, and it's been great Jen, do you have any?
No, just thank you. Thank you again for weaving. You know, it's all, I have this picture of like threads and mosaic, and your stories are like threads that have been woven into kind of the mosaic that is our church, and your experiences have really helped to shape even just our conversation today. So thank you for giving us a gift of small threads that help us pursue oneness together. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Oneness Restored is a podcast brought to you by City of Refuge Church in Houston, Texas, and produced by Podastery Studios. To learn more about City of Refuge or to join us for Sunday worship services, you can tune in at 11 a.m. Central at cityofrefuge.org, or you can register for services there. Our producer for the show is Bo York, and our guests this episode have been Judy Kim and Susan Sorensen, and we've been your hosts, Alejandra Nikki Pisania
and John Oihoma Igege.
We look forward to speaking with you again soon on the next Oneness Restored.